The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading from Smithsonian, the magazine of the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. Today's programming is underwritten with the generous support of the Kepin family, and we wish to thank them for that support. And we're reading today from combined January-February edition of Smithsonian. Lucky, pretend like it's ice cream. Oh, me. No place like home. Now in self-imposed exile in Portugal, artist A.I. Weiwei. A.I. is his first name. W.E.I. is his last name. Is constructing a massive edifice that captures his earliest ambitions and his love for the country he can't return to, yet can't seem to forget. Honestly, I think it's useless, a useless building, says we in mid-afternoon, talking outside his new studio, an imposing wood-framed structure, nearing completion on a barren stretch of scrub brush in the Portuguese countryside. The activist artist has two studios already, in Beijing and Berlin. I don't need another studio, he says. Nonetheless, he's erecting another one above his home here, about an hour southeast of Lisbon in the rural Alentejo region. Some 30,000 square feet of open plan space around a central courtyard. Beneath a construction crane, 100 solid wood pillars rise to meet a complex lattice wood beam overhead, each piece notched into place without nails or adhesives, following the ancient rules of traditional Chinese joinery. The building, designed by AI, isn't architecture in the contemporary sense, but something more essential. In China, nobody is called an architect. We call it big cabinetry and small cabinetry, he says. Big cabinetry, you build houses. Small cabinetry, you make furniture. Same methods. It's an old type of language. It's puzzled together. For me, it's more like a game. Before moving to Portugal 3 years ago, AI, 66 years old, China's most famous dissident artist, now unable to return to his homeland, lest authorities decide to detain him, had been living in Berlin, where he arrived in 2015 after he was released from house arrest in Beijing and the communist regime returned his confiscated passport. Now he's traded the hustle of the big city for the idyllic calm of this sparsely populated corner of Portugal. I used to enjoy the fast, now I enjoy the slowness, he says of the change in scenery and lifestyle. Even in isolation, though, as an icon of free speech and an outspoken presence on social media, whose pronouncements sometimes rankle more than Chinese authorities, AI's life still moves at a ferocious pace. Last fall, as war consumed Israel and the Gaza Strip, AI weighed in on the conflict on X, formerly Twitter, calling out what he saw as the influence of American Jews on U.S. support for Israel, igniting controversy that quickly rippled around the world, financially, culturally, in terms of media influence. The Jewish community has had a significant presence in the United States, AI wrote in part in a post he later deleted. The annual $3 billion aid package to Israel has for decades been touted as one of the most valuable investments the United States has ever made. This partnership is often described as one of shared destiny. In response, AI's London gallery, Listen, indefinitely postponed a new exhibition of his work that had been set to open in November. Over the years, Ai has been a critic of Israel, rather a critic of the Israeli government policy toward Palestinians of the U.S.-Mexico border wall, of the United Kingdom's Brexit vote, of Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. His criticism of German society after he left Berlin, describing a pervasive authoritarian mindset and a distaste for foreigners, and going so far as to tell The Guardian, Nazism perfectly exists in Germany daily life today, led to a fierce backlash in the German press. When I start to criticize German society, they have a sense of loss or betrayal. We saved this guy's life. There's no gratitude, says Ai, of his comments about the country that gave him asylum. Still, he insists he has no regrets. Portugal has offered something of a sanctuary from the spotlight, even as he continues to share his unrestrained thoughts in interviews and posts on Instagram and X. He put an offer on the 40-acre property, a lawyer's former vacation home, after seeing it once on his first trip to the country in 2019. It was very random, nothing planned, he says. I didn't even study the map to see where it was. He was drawn to Portugal by the plentiful sunshine, good real estate values, and a golden visa program offering expats willing to invest in the country easy access to European Union residency. He took over the low-slung house with the furniture in it. The last owners, a couple with four children, even left him their big white Aliento Mastiff, a local breed. That dog was so sad, he says. Ai, who shares the property with three assistants, spent periods of lockdown during the COVID-19 pandemic here, living among the artifacts of someone else's life. It was really interesting to see that he appropriated the circumstance of the house, says Philippe Vernier, director of the Serralves Museum in Portugal, who visited Ai shortly after he moved in. I see a parallel with the way he approached art by occupying circumstances, moving in like the hermit crabs who occupy these empty shells. There's a tennis court Ai never uses and a pool he never swims in, though he enjoys watching the sunlight reflecting off its surface. You need some water for good feng shui, he says. He brought one cat from Berlin and adopted another, added potted plants and a decorative tub filled with koi fish to the courtyard and a big bird cage with a pair of turucos, exotic birds from Africa, to the veranda out back. We needed some life here, he says. With almost no art at all in the house, there's not much to indicate one of the world's highest profile artists lives here. A single recognizable Ai creation, hangs in a hallway, a rendition of Lego, a favored medium these days, of an iconic early work, dropping a Han Dynasty urn. The original, a TRIPTYCH, not sure how to pronounce that, of photographs capturing Ai smashing a 2,000-year-old Chinese relic, referenced the destruction of Chinese heritage during Mao's Cultural Revolution. Some observers pointed out that in creating the work, Ai himself was destroying, some said, desecrating, that same cultural heritage. He hung the Lego version, he told me, so TV crews who come to visit him in Portugal will have something to shoot. I don't like to look at my artwork. I began mapping out plans for his Portugal studio a few months after he arrived, with no clear idea of how he might use the space. Eventually, he says, he might shift some of the fabrication that now happens in Berlin and Beijing to Portugal. But the new building is also an end unto itself. I said, maybe I should do something here to make me feel some sense of belonging. AI is a polymath and an autodidactic, a conceptual artist, documentary filmmaker, and architect. He helped design the Bird's Nest Stadium for the 2008 Beijing Olympics, despite having no formal design training. My work you cannot really define as architecture, sculpture, or design, he says. I work in between, in everything. He creates beautiful things that double as big activist statements, often overcoming huge logistical hurdles along the way. He's a tireless figure, has got extraordinary energy, extraordinary ability to work on many different levels, says Greg Hilty, partner and curatorial director at Lesson. I think he can do that because he approaches everything in a rational, intuitive way. In 2010, AI filled the Turbine Hall at London's Tate Modern Museum with 100 million porcelain sunflower seeds, handcrafted by 1,600 Chinese artisans, a commentary on global trade and the ubiquity of made-in-China exports. He tackled the global refuge crisis with his 2019 piece, Life Vest Snake, weaving an enormous serpent from life vests recovered from the Greek Isle of Lesbos. In 2021, he presented an outdoor sculpture cast in iron from a mold made from a 100-foot-tall tree in the Brazilian rainforest, as part of an exhibition focused on deforestation shown at the Seurat Museum. Its director, Vergne, and that's spelled V-E-R-G-N-E, had originally approached L.I. about organizing a show on his architectural work. I liked the way he turned my question around, says Vernier, when I said, I want to do something about your architecture. He sent me a picture of this tree, and he told me, this is architecture. This is a temple. AI transforms ready-made objects from the ancient and modern worlds into complex works of art, carpeting museum floors with thousands of Stone Age tools or porcelain teapot spouts, and welding together bicycle frames to create towering sculptures. A few years ago, he acquired a huge trove of buttons destined for landfill from a defunct British factory. 30 tons of buttons, he says, covering the whole history of buttons. For the longest time, he had no idea how he'd use them. Now he's considering a new body of work focused on the Industrial Revolution. I cannot just casually make something, he says. It has to stay with me, sometimes for years. I don't know what to do. In 2014, he unveiled some of his first Lego works, portraits of 176 prisoners of conscience and human rights advocates from around the world. Among them, heroic figures like Nelson Mandela and Martin Luther King Jr., and more controversial ones such as Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning. The portraits based on blown-up photographs matched each pixel to a color in the regular Lego spectrum. It's only 40 colors, Eyal says. Can you believe it makes a very sophisticated image? First shown on Alcatraz, the former prison in San Francisco Bay, the works are now in a permanent collection of the Hirshhorn Museum in Washington, D.C. When you see the works, the portraits, they appear to be pixelated, so it is referring, I think, to this moment we live in, where everything is rendered through this digital format, says Hirshhorn director Melissa Chu. Aya has since gone on to produce large Lego versions of many masterworks of Western art. His take on Monet's water lilies, shown at the Design Museum in London last spring, is constructed from 650,000 Lego bricks. In other new pieces, he's been adding his own mischievous touch to iconic works. He inserted the Bird's Nest Stadium into a new Lego version of Washington crossing the Delaware, and popped his new studio in Portugal with a Lego rendition of Christina's World by Andrew Wyeth. For me, it's the best media to have my funny attitude toward art, he says, of his Lego fixation. AI has always been meticulous about documenting on film and video both his works in progress and the world around him. That led eventually to a thriving sideline making documentaries. Human Flow, a 2017 feature on the global refugee crisis, took a year to shoot in 23 countries during the pandemic. He oversaw three more searing documentaries, dispatching crews to cover the coronavirus outbreak in Wuhan, China, and pro-democracy movement in Hong Kong, and the plight of the Rohingya, R-O-H-I-N-G-Y-A, refugees who fled Myanmar for Bangladesh. He's in post-production now on a new globe-spanning film, Animality, produced in collaboration with an animal welfare nonprofit called Four Paws International, which features footage of animal abuse. Not a pleasant film to watch, he says, but I think necessary. High's interest in architecture began with a childhood fascination with material and logic of the built world surrounding him. He learned to make bricks when he was just 10 years old, enlisted in a communal work detail in his small village. In the hardship, he found sense of accomplishment. I did all kinds of hard labor when I was small, he says. I enjoyed all of it because it was a challenge. You cannot handle it, you cannot manage it, but once you manage it, it's such a joy. It was punishing upbringing, as AI recounts in his memoir, 1,000 Years of Joys and Sorrows, published in 2021. He will release another memoir, Zodiac, in graphic novel form this January, with illustrations by the Italian political cartoonist Gianluca Constantini. The book weaves the artist's personal story with that of his father, Ai Ying, one of China's most famous poets. Ai Qing became a literary hero during the Communist Revolution following World War II, embraced by Mao Zedong, and took his followers as they fought to take over the country. His fortunes changed dramatically during the Cultural Revolution, the great purge of intellectuals in the 1960s that began a few years after Ai Weiwei's birth. Denounced as a rightist, the poet was exiled with his family to a remote corner of China on the edge of the Gobi Desert, where they lived as social pariahs. For many years, their home was a literal hole in the ground. I was growing up in silence. We didn't even have birds where we were, says Ai Weiwei. Music. We didn't even have electricity. We didn't even have water. I can't even imagine how we survived. Ai Qing's public rehabilitation followed Mao's death in 1976. Today, he is considered a literary giant, a sort of Chinese Walt Whitman, required reading in public school curriculums. Nobody talks about the long period when his family's life was a living hell. They just skipped that 20 years like it didn't happen. Though his father, who died in 1996, had been an accomplished painter as well as a poet. AI says he never once considered the possibility of an art career as a child. When we grew up, we called artists art workers, purely belonging to the propaganda department. There were no independent artists, nothing independent, he says. There was no individual. When I finished high school, the academics and intellectuals who had been considered enemies of the state were beginning to get their lives back. The country's universities, which had been shuttered for years, were starting to reopen. AI offered a coveted spot at the Beijing Film Academy alongside other children of leading cultural figures. He didn't stick around long, dropping out after 2 years. I felt like I didn't fit in. They were a little bit privileged, AI says of his classmates, many of whom went on to become celebrated filmmakers. I didn't feel that way. In 1981, when he was 23, AI followed a girlfriend to Pennsylvania and then crossed the country to Berkeley, California, where he spent a year studying English. He arrived in New York in 1983, moving into a tiny apartment in the East Village. He took an odd job to survive, working in a framing shop, sketching portraits on the street, and he discovered blackjack, an enduring obsession, making frequent trips to Atlantic City. Probably until now, Atlantic City is the city I've visited most in the world, he says. He took art classes at Parsons and the Arts Student League and was introduced to the work of Andy Warhol and Marcel Duchamp, two important influences. In the mid-1980s, he made his own off-kilter portraits of Mao, among his last canvases before he abandoned painting entirely in favor of conceptual art. He also had an active social life. Immersed in the bohemian milieu of East Village, his circle of friends included the poet Allen Ginsberg. Capturing everything with a camera that was often slung around his neck, I had this idea that my life was almost meaningless at that time, but the photos have some meaning, he says. After learning his father was gravely ill in 1993, AI returned to China for the first time in more than a decade, moving back in with his parents in Beijing. I felt strange at home. I became a foreigner again. He kept to himself, busy, visiting flea markets and antique stores, amassing the beginning of what would eventually grow into a vast collection of dusty relics. I didn't know anything about our past, so what was a period of intensive learning about the material life in China 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, he says, of his early flea market excursions. The original photos of AI dropping a Han Dynasty urn was shot on a whim by his younger brother in that period. It was 1995 and not printed until years later. Now it's become a kind of iconic anti-establishment image, AI says, but nothing was planned. When his mother lost patience with him hanging around the house, he rented a piece of fallow farmland near the airport, where he began planning his first live-in studio. She said, "You should move out. I've had enough of you," he says. The Beijing studio, his first major building design, modeled partially on a New York loft, was completed in just a few months in 1999. With its clean lines, high ceilings, and ample skylights, it became a sensation in the Chinese press. "My building appeared in the most sophisticated architecture magazines," he says. "They invited me to Japan and Germany as a new star of architecture. Nobody knew I'm an artist." The idea around his studio came to be known as Beijing East Village, embodying the spirit of the New York neighborhood where AI had first come into contact with activist artists. He brought a lot of those ideas back to China for a slightly younger generation of impressionable artists, says Chiu of the Hirshhorn, who met AI when he was a graduate student visiting Beijing in that period. As a new art scene rose up around him, he launched his own not-for-profit gallery space and eventually his own restaurant. "We had to close because so many friends came, and very often we wouldn't let them pay," he says. And he began testing the limits of free speech, putting out some of China's first underground art publications. The first, a black book with no title, was his veiled response to Red Flag, an official Communist Party magazine, and organizing some of its edgiest art exhibitions. "When I decided to go back to China, I asked myself one question: am I afraid to be arrested? And the answer was no," he says. In the fall of 2000, AR rented a warehouse space in Shanghai for an exhibition showcase. Other envelope-pushing Chinese artists coinciding with the city's third official biennial art. "They were trying to promote the city, and I had this show," he says, of the local authorities. "They were so mad. The head of the Communist Party held the catalog up to the Central Committee. Look at what art has begun." Though he had never used a computer before, in 2005, at the invitation of one of China's biggest internet portals, AI began publishing his own daily blog. His first post, a single sentence, was published online that November. "To express yourself needs a reason. Expressing yourself is the reason." Sharing his unbridled thoughts, the blog soon attracted millions of readers. For a few years, writing became a compulsion. "I spent 95% of my time, energy on the blog, less than 5% on AI. I wrote a few million words." I wish I had time to read more. There's a lot more left of that. We've run out of time for today's episode of Smithsonian. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Frank Urban, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's programming is underwritten with the generous support of the Kepin family. We wish to thank them for their support. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time, if you have any comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138.